What's up, everybody? DJ here from Move the Sticks. Along with Bucky Brooks, our podcast, we look at the NFL through a player personnel perspective, looking at teams, looking at matchups, looking at the NFL draft. You can catch us on Move the Sticks, NFL.com/podcast, as well as iTunes.
David. Football. Football David.
The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. As you just heard there, available on iTunes, Stitcher, NFL.com/podcasts, and beyond. And as always, we are presented by McDonald's, headquartered out of Chicago, Illinois, where we have just returned from miserable weather, delightful times. Speaking of delightful, joining us in Studio 66 today, one of our very favorites, not just here. I mean, listen, sincerely, as nice as it gets in this industry or really any of the other various industries in which I've worked, Charles Davis is here. We'll get into talking to him a little bit more, but as we've been doing the last month or so, it's time for the Hurry Up Offense. Some quick questions, quick answers. Handsome Hank's here too. There's the whistle. Charles Davis, who's the starting quarterback in Denver in 2016?
Mark Sanchez.
L.A.
Jared Goff.
Philly.
Carson Wentz.
Jets.
Good luck.
Handsome Hank, Denver.
Paxton Lynch.
L.A.
Goff.
Philly.
Wentz.
Jets.
Fitzpatrick in the end.
Charles Davis went to the home of one of the great college football fight songs. What's your favorite fight song, Handsome Hank?
I can't say I have a favorite.
Boo! Who doesn't have a favorite college football fight song? Shame on you.
All right, fine.
Charles Davis.
Leicester City.
Yeah, Leicester City's one.
Leicester City.
Rocky Top ain't bad. How many pounds did you gain in Chicago, Charles Davis?
Minimum of 7 per day.
Handsome?
If I lived there, I would gain probably 400. Yep. But in that week, I would say somewhere around 10.
I will say, I will answer my own questions. Denver, it's going to be Sanchez to start the season. L.A., it's going to be Goff. Philly, it's going to be Wentz. And for the Jets, I'm going to go with Geno Smith to start the season. I want to talk
about Hackenberg. Here's what I think. I said Lynch, but I think he'll wind up starting more games. If you're talking about day one, I think it'll be Sanchez, but I think they're going to pull Sanchez out of there pretty quickly.
I like his answer.
And I wonder where Fitzpatrick lands. Let's get into that.
Best fight song
is the University of Michigan. I don't root for the University of Michigan. The most underrated fight song is Army's. Look it up. Black Tie Behind the Glass.
Fight, if you can fight on that Brave Old Army Team.
Fight on, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
There's nothing like it at Mikey Stadium.
Never been to one of those games.
You got to get there. You absolutely have to. I would suggest an early to mid-October game. Go there. Stay at the Hotel Thayer right there on the base. You roll in, watch the cadets. The long gray line comes in when they come in for the game. You'll hear the fight song. And I will recommend a book. When Saturdays still, when Saturdays still mattered most, I believe it's called. Mark Beach wrote the book, former writer of Sports Illustrated. The last undefeated Army team, Colonel Red Blake was still the head coach.
Wow, that long ago.
1958 team. I think they had a tie in there. It's a phenomenal book, phenomenal read. And if you don't end up back at the banks of the Hudson after that, forget it. But if you're going to go, just tell me you're going. Give me notice. I will have my man, guy that I grew up with. He's the executive associate athletic director there named Bob Beretta, and he will make sure you have the time of your life. You will everything you need to see. You'll see why they built West Point where they did, because back then ships were the problems of coming to get you, and how they had them closed out on the Hudson, where if you came in the way you had to turn and navigate, they had you.
Yep.
I mean, it is phenomenal. Absolutely. You can feel the history. When you're walking around, you can feel the posts.
Oh, I'd love that.
Absolutely sensational. Bob and I grew up rival towns. We started playing against each other in the sixth or seventh grade. Bob played baseball at St. Bonaventure and has gone on to a fantastic
career. Now, back up real quick for me, if you would. You mentioned something called a book.
Yes.
I'm not. What is? I'm not familiar with.
Well, in the old days, it was actually a thing that had these. It was kind of a little bit had a little heft to it, and it had pages, and you turned them and you read them. Nowadays, it's this little thing that you punch buttons and it lights up.
I've seen that.
Now that rings a bell. Yeah, hit it, Black Tie. Now,
took a second to get Shaq going there, but
I love it.
Listen, how about the service academies?
It's the best.
You got that one. You go up in Air Force.
Off
we go into the Wild Blue.
Awesome.
Got Anchors Away.
Anchors Away is good, but I think most people would say that's the best of them. Not my favorite.
I grew up an hour from West Point, so that's where my allegiance lies. You know, the
head coach. As a child growing up on the banks of the Three Rivers, Pittsburgh, PA, Pitt and or Navy. I mean, I'm sorry, Army and or Navy would roll through Pitt Stadium once a season, and so I got to see the glorious sight of the servicemen and women coming in the grays or in the navies. And either way, it was a sight to behold, filling full sections of Pitt Stadium. It was neat stuff. And of course, as a Pitt fan, it was also nice because Pitt would always house whichever team it was that came through there.
Are you up for Air Force at all?
Not well. I'm down with the Air Force, but I didn't. I've never witnessed them.
Can I listen to? I've never heard it.
Give it to me real quick.
Oh.
Into the sun. Da-da-da. Into the wild blue yonder. Da-da-da-da. I used to know the words.
You remember they had that great run of option quarterbacks.
Sure.
Right, that was their thing, exactly.
D. Dallas was there. I mean, they had a bunch of guys that just ran through there. They ran that triple option.
They had the one kid who I thought was going
to. Ken Hatfield to Fisher to Barry, and they just rolled. They were winning big-time games for a while there in the Mountain, what is now the Mountain West Conference. BYU was their nemesis.
Yep, that's right.
One team they couldn't get past most of the time.
Fisher DeBerry, boy.
He's a college football Hall of Famer.
I love the college football history talk, and I mentioned Pitt Stadium, and I looked you up on Wikipedia, Charles Davis. That's my research, boy. Right. I dig in on that. I don't know about this book business you're talking about, but Wikipedia, it never fails me. And I learned, I already knew, of course, Charles Davis was a fine football player from the state of Tennessee, and he matriculated at the University of... But I didn't realize 1983, you were a freshman there, and your first game ever then in Neyland Stadium was against the Pitt Panthers.
The Pitt Panthers. And do you know John Kangemi?
I love John Kangemi.
Isn't he a good dude?
Kangemi and I, let me tell you something about that. First of all, that game, as I'm sure you recall, you lost. Pitt went in there, and I remember watching on TV.
You got to rub it in.
There were 102,000 people there, if I'm not mistaken,
we were rocking
that day.
And
I couldn't believe it. My young brain couldn't fathom.
That was an average crowd for us.
And the guy who –
So you went to this game?
No, I remember watching it on TV, but I would go with my old man to see Pitt play periodically with Foj Fazio and Jackie Sherrill and Mike Gottfried and beyond. In fact, as I've told you before, Handsome, I once attended, I think it was 86 with Kangemi as the quarterback, or it might have been 85. Either way, Jeff George's and Rod Woodson's Boilermakers, went up 14-0 in the first 4 minutes of the game. Pitt won 42-14.
Nice.
And Kangemi was the quarterback. And in the early fourth quarter, with Pitt well ahead, but Kangemi still in at the quarterback position, the defense was out on the field for Pitt. And I turn around, my father in West Lafayette in Ross-Ade Stadium. I turn around. Where's my father? Where is he? Oh, he's sitting on the bench talking to John Kangemi. And I go over to listen to the content of their conversation. My old man's bending his ear about golf. And then, you know, on number 15, how a dog leg's there. And I said, you know, I'm a kid. And I said, old man, what are you? He's playing a game. You can't talk to him.
What course was he talking about?
I don't remember.
Was he talking about, you know, 15 at Oakmont?
Something like that. And Kangemi, I brought this up to him because he has until very recently been doing Dolphins radio down in Miami. And I brought this up to him. And he said, I remember that. And I remember saying, hey, Doc, I got to run for a second. And I had to go back out on the field.
Here's the best part for me with John Kangemi. That game you're talking about, he didn't start.
Right. Okay. Cummings got hurt.
Cummings gets hurt. Alvin Toles, our linebacker, hits him. Alvin ends up being a first-round pick with the New Orleans Saints, I believe, that year or the next year. Hits him, knocks him out of the ball game. Probably the worst thing that happened to us. Because we were at that point, 0-0, somewhere in that neighborhood. We got inside the pit 20 three or four times in the early going of the game, came with field goals. And next thing I know, Kenjemi comes in. And who was that great receiver? Dwight Collins,
who I figured, and he was very productive with Marino, who John Cummings all summer long was slated. They had three quarterbacks they were choosing from. Right. Chris Jellick was the third guy. And they were deciding Cummings gets the gig. There was optimism. This guy's going to be good. And he breaks
his collarbone.
That's what it was.
He's out. And Kenjemi comes in, cover three. Deep, you know, each defense back has thirds and safe, strong safeties underneath. And on the outside third, Dwight Collins just takes off and goes, and Kenjemi just heaves it and sticks it right on him. Beautiful throw. I end up tackling him into the end zone, so that doesn't matter.
Really?
Yes,
wow.
I tackled Dwight Collins. That does you a whole lot of good.
Number 32, Dwight Collins.
He just scored, and they beat us 13-3, because we ended up with a field goal for all of our work that game. Pitt's first down in that game, middle of the third quarter.
Wow.
We were stuffing them, dominating them, and then Kenjemi comes in, sticks it to us, and you know every time I talk to him, he's got that nice little grin.
That would have been tailback. If memory serves, that would have been tailback Joe McCall era,
Joe
right?
McCall.
Number 34 but for the, those Pitt
but,
Panthers.
But the best part of that game, Bill Frelick, monster, offensive lineman, Reggie White, they went chest to chest.
Wow.
All day long.
The two mastodons just pounding each other.
That is awesome stuff.
So congratulations to the Pitt Panthers for sticking it to us.
50 years ago.
See? Isn't it nice when you come in here? I immediately jump on you and remind you of the loss.
Last thing. If we don't give equal time, we're all in trouble.
Yeah, right.
You're right.
Naval Academy.
Yeah, I want to hear it.
Anchors away.
My boys, anchors away.
Have you visited Naval Academy?
Yes, I have. And Annapolis.
Hank, have you been to Annapolis?
I have not.
How about John Paul Jones's? Right? John Paul Jones's. Or is it Davy Jones? John Paul Jones.
Yeah. Well,
John Paul Jones's coffin, right, in the middle of that building.
I'll tell you, I haven't been on the campus, but they do walk around in the full-on white,
right,
the bell-bottoms and the little funny little hats and everything. That would be enough maybe to make me not go to the Naval Academy.
Yeah, you would have a hard time with that. So, okay, can I deliver? Because that's the first time I've
– little towns.
That's the first time I've heard any of those.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to deliver my ranking.
Yeah, we did it.
Navy,
uh-huh,
Army, Air Force.
One, two, three. Look at that. In a mild upset, Navy goes to number one.
I think that's the prevailing opinion. But to me, I
like it. It's jaunty. That last one was a little more upbeat.
Speaking of ranking things.
And they've won 13 in a row over Army.
You know, there was a time where I used to say that is the best rivalry in sports, not just in college football or football. It's the best because it's the one. You know how people say in the state of Alabama, it doesn't make a difference if you go 1-12 as long as the one is against the rival. But that's not true. If Alabama went 1-12, no one would be happy.
There's going to be some changes around.
Yeah, I don't think that would go over. But in Army-Navy, that is in fact true. And I don't think there's any other rivalry in which you could say that, but it has gotten so one-sided it's not as pleasurable as it once was.
Army's coming back this year, baby. This is the year.
Is that right?
This is the year.
Look, who knows everything about Army?
Rooting on the cadet.
Charles Davis also knows a lot about the NFL draft, as you probably just witnessed on NFL Network, NFL.com, and beyond. Handsome Hank and I are going to dig in on some Game of Thrones here in what was another spellbinding episode in just a bit. But let's dig into it now, Charles. And I mean, I'm all over the place. Oh, one thing I did want to say is mazel tov to Handsome Hank, because his guy, who he's really been, Moritz Boehringer. Am I saying his name right?
Moritz Boehringer.
Boehringer.
Well, the O and E, that the American spelling is actually with an umlaut, and he and I talked about maybe him being the first NFL player, I believe, with an umlaut.
On the jersey?
On the jersey? That would be cool. Historic. He was going to find out from the Vikings whether they have really an umlaut cool.
Hank, we can't thank you
thing.
Enough. For,
it was cool. It was very
listen,
cool.
We can't thank you enough for what you did with Boehringer and being able to be with him, have him on the set, not once. But then after the selection, he was able to come back with all the things you guys did with him and be able to bring him there. we can't thank you enough for us knuckleheads sitting there on set to be the beneficiaries of this great show. Of this
you
great,
you showed
show.
Him around, which I guess makes you in a way. You guided him through the day, which I guess makes you a German Shepherd.
Very good.
Oh, do it for me. Where's my rim shot? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, well, look, I appreciate that, Charles, but I will say, like, the guy who really deserves the credit's a friend of mine named Adam Dirty. He scouted him in Europe. He discovered him.
Is he the one who's been coaching him?
He's been coaching him and training him.
Because I didn't get a chance
Boca
to
Raton.
Meet him, but he was
and
with him, right?
He was with him. He's
I saw
a
him in the corner
guy.
There, and I didn't get a chance to meet yep. him, and I hated that. But, boy, he's done a fantastic
He's a fantastic guy. He's done it with a couple other players as well. And, you know, you're going to see Mo, hopefully, but then another receiver named Anthony Dable, who was there, and a defensive end named F.A. Obada. Anthony's from France. F.A.'s from England. And I really believe...
F.A. what?
Obada. Originally Nigerian.
Is he not set up for an endorsement deal as soon as he hits the league right away? F.A.O. Schwartz is just all over this guy.
I think it all adds up to Handsome Hank now being officially the number two ranking official in the NFL right now.
I'm pretty sure that's not
the case. Let me tell you this. There is no equal for Charles Davis because, as I talked about, he's a modest fella, but it was me, Mel Kiper Jr. and Charles Davis in an elevator on Saturday evening after the draft had wrapped back at the hotel, riding up, and as you know, people got off on their staggered floors, Charles Davis got off, and then it's me and Kiper and Pumpkin Pie. I don't know if
you
had the
pumpkin pie
or not at the time, but Mel Kiper, I mean, as soon as the doors close, he says, "Boy, that is the nicest guy in the business," and I said, yes, he is.
He's awfully
and,
nice
oh,
to say
I went
that.
On and on. What a sweetheart you were.
He's awfully nice to say that. I will say that. Let me say this real quick about Mel. He met my dad, I'm going to say seven, eight years ago at a draft in New York. Every time I see Mel since then, how's your father? How's Coach doing? What's he up to? What's happening? Every single time.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Classy way to comport yourself. But all right, we have the time has already run short. Hit the bricks, Charles Davis. No, let's talk quickly about a couple of things here. And first of all, I don't want to dictate the conversation.
Yeah,
what jumped out to you? What was the best pick you saw? Let's start there. You have a sunny disposition, so that's a good place to start.
The best pick?
Yeah.
I was really happy Dallas took Ezekiel.
Me before. Too.
I was so happy they took him because I like the running game. I can't help it. I was raised on it. This is how it is. I've been talking about the running back renaissance for the last year or so, and we're going to see it next year. Mm-hmm. If everything goes according to plan in next year's draft, people are going to have to make some decisions. All that talk about devaluing running backs, it might go out the window. We might have a bunch of them next year. We're talking about as being first, second-round kids. So I was happy to see it because, to me, Dallas, everyone said they didn't address defense because I said, okay, you don't have any defensive ends. What are you going to do? Well, they did address defense by handing him the
football
more.
Keeping the defense off the field.
Bingo. Handsome Hank's got it. So I love that pick. Absolutely loved it because it satisfied everything. Jerry Jones wanted star power. He got it. Mm-hmm. He wanted a productive player. He got it. He wanted something that truly helped his team. He got it. And what's going to keep him in the news? He got it. So I thought everything came together on that one. And then the Jalen Smith pick I thought was tremendous. Great TV, great theater. But I was like, I didn't know Dallas was in that position. And frankly, I thought it was going to be Miles Jack in that
Me too, but aren't they essentially in the same spot? But Jalen
But Jack
Smith,
we expect to play this year.
Yeah.
But it's Jalen such a Smith we don't expect to play at all this year.
But that's a Jerry move. Like Jerry's as a GM is not under pressure from his owner. You know, so
good point.
So Jerry can ooh, take ooh, that kind of a
nope,
project.
He's not gonna fire the GM.
Right, exactly. He's got Tony Romo and he needs to win now because he has that window with Romo, but at the same time, you know, 2-3 years down the line, the owner's not going to be saying to him, "Hey, remember when you missed on that second round pick?"
And he is brilliant in keeping storylines going because that all happened. Then as we settled in, he drafted the basketball player out of Baylor.
Yep.
Which is a Dallas tradition.
Hasn't played a game since middle school.
Right.
Hasn't had a football practice since
But it's a Dallas
school.
Tradition. You go back. Rayfield Wright, who introduced one of the picks for Dallas, it was a basketball player, turned to a Hall of Fame player. Remember Cornell Green? Basketball player, I believe at Utah State, turned into a football. Dallas has a tradition of that, keeps it going. And then I pick up Monday Morning Quarterback with Peter King. What's the lead article? Jerry Jones has regrets on not taking Paxton Lynch. Yep. He knows what
Boy, what
doing.
Kind of move Brilliant. Is that to make, though, Brilliant. When you have Dak Prescott, who has a chance? I mean, I think Dak Prescott has a chance of being.
Jerry's not worried. Jerry's not worried about that. He'll go see Dak, put an arm around him, and said, "Don't you worry about that article. You were my guy all the time. I was just getting some ink."
I agree with the great theater, and it was really a touching thing to see Jalen Smith, and you felt bad for him. And you know, I certainly think college kids should get paid, and so you know, from the Marcus Lattimores and the Miles Jacks and Jalen Smiths, I'm happy to see guys like that get their shot. But I mean, I don't, you know, for a team that is in win now mode, and the Cowboys certainly are that with 36-year-old Romo, Brittle, they take a little pressure off of him with Zeke Elliott, that great offensive line. As I keep saying, I think, you know, 45-42 is the final score of every game the Cowboys play this year. It's a matter of
it will be entertaining.
Right. Yeah, whether or not they win out there. The other team in that division that has a real chance, and I know people like the DC picks, and they really had a nice draft too, so they're going to stay players in it. I don't know why. Maybe I'm just a curmudgeon or maybe I'm just cynical, but I expect them to take a step back this year as the Cowboys kind of rise back up, and I think the Giants will as well. The swing and the miss that they made, of all the teams that could have taken Laremy Tunsil and didn't, that's the one. I think they're, of all the teams, they're going to regret it more than anyone else.
Talk about the Giants?
True or false? The
Giants. About the Giants?
I think they had the need there, and they could have really solidified things.
I think all of that works, except it's the Giants. It's the
and it really is, right.
And they're not touching.
Same thing as the Rooney.
I would imagine he went, like, that was one of the teams where he was taken off the board.
I think that name went off their board as fast as possible.
Because it's the Giants. They don't take those risks ever.
I know
who they are.
I know everybody's beating it into the ground already.
Although I know someone will circle around and go, well, they kept Lawrence Taylor around all those years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Well, I said
different era. And
tough one.
Cut LT. Yeah.
One's already in the family,
right?
Versus
right.
One.
So now you're trying to help him as opposed to.
I think you can probably think of who I'm thinking of when I say that the Rooneys have similar sorts of things that you might point a finger at. But of course, they don't go out of their way to bring that into the locker room if it isn't already there. So what about the Joey Bosa pick? Because that one also, to me, was a head-scratcher. Now, Daniel Jeremiah told the both of us, CD, on Saturday that he had that guy as his fourth player. But correct me if I'm wrong, over the last two – yes, 6 months ago, everybody was high on Bosa. But in the last 2 months, I heard very little positive talk about him. I heard, he's a Matt Leinart type. He's surrounded by so much talent. I think he might just be another guy.
I thought that was a bit much. I wasn't in that camp at all. And my theory on the draft is very simple. We start out, as the run-up to the draft begins, these are the top guys in the draft. And then as we go along, we're like, oh, my God, I'm tired of talking about those guys. Who else can we talk about in the
draft?
Let's
pump some people up.
Bingo. We pump up other people. We find the flaws in the guys we like. And then about a week or so before the draft, if you go take your original list and lay it on the draft list at the end, you're almost back to where you were. My example of that arc is always Robert Griffin III and Andrew Luck. You remember that. Luck, for 2 years, was the number one guy. And then as we got into it, we got bored and we went – but, God, he's going to Indianapolis, and they're going to be so bad. Remember, we thought they were just going to be miserable. Maybe they need a quarterback who's mobile and can work. And so all of a sudden, Robert Griffin III became the guy. And then Luck had his pro day and threw everything into the wind and finished with that 75-yard laser to Chris Owusu that he dropped and turned and looked at everybody like, any more questions? Everybody went, okay, we're good here. And we're right back to where we were. So that's my theory on that. I think Bosa kind of went through that. We kind of nitpicked him to death. But at the end, San Diego had him as their top guy, according to them, which, you know, every team's going to say. But it doesn't surprise me. I doubt many teams had him below 10 on their board. I really would be surprised if they
did. So bottom line, you would.
They will maneuver him, use him, Dave. They will have him in different spots.
Over Buckner? You like him better than Buckner?
I think I would like I like Bosa a little bit better than I like Buckner,
I also – I mean, you draft best player available, and by all accounts, it seemed to me Jalen Ramsey was the pick there.
Yeah, I think what happened with that one was they wanted to get stronger up front. Corey Legit is a very good player who just gets overwhelmed because he's got to do everything. Bosa will help him in a big way. We may see Corey Legit's name pop up better now that he has help and he can actually be a little more free to do things.
We've seen, that benefit. You know, guys like maybe Melvin Ingram also will get off a little bit more.
That's why Andrew Billings to Cincinnati in the fourth round was a big deal for Geno Atkins.
He's a guy, you talk about a big dropper. I was asking you, Bucky Brooks, Daniel Jeremiah, why the drop? And people told me, oh, no, he's a media creation. Day of or on Friday morning. No, it was Saturday morning, in fact. He still was on the board. And I was asking why. I mean, all I was hearing about was this is a first round guy, and they and
did
I
you
was
go back
told,
and look at our top 50.
Well, I,
did you? I'm talking about looking at mine, Bucky's, Daniels. I guarantee you, I haven't looked at everyone's. I will guarantee that he's in the top 20, 25 of every one of ours.
But then I heard, but somebody told me, and I won't say who it was, but somebody said, oh no, he's a media creation. Scouts, NFL teams don't like him. And I said, well, then what all the buzz? And what is the knock on him? Is there some injury we don't know about or something? And they said, no, he's bow-legged, and people don't like defensive linemen because their knees tend to give out early in their career. And I mean, then why has this not been mentioned?
I also had the bow-legged guys are slower starters off the ball. I got that one too. But I had I texted three guys that morning, and what they gave me was – two down guy with no discernible trait that you take. And every one of them gave me the same comp, Jaron Reed. Jaron Reed is really a two down defensive tackle, but he's such a good run enforcer that you live with that. There's your discernible trait. There's something that he gives you there. They don't think that Billings gives the same thing. That's what the three gave me. That's why they said he dropped into the fourth round.
It's so funny.
Because you want guys who can do what nowadays? Rush, pass.
But it's funny the ebb Alabama and the flow. It's one of the ongoing conversations, and if you track my time at the NFL in the last 5 years of our conversations with Handsome and beyond, it's funny. No, it's a quarterback league now. Oh, the running backs are dead, but between Le'Veon Bell and Todd Gurley and now Zeke Elliott presumably behind that line, you're only going to see those guys continue to rise up. And now the new thing is if you're a nose tackle, if you're a pure run stopper, then your value is way down. I suspect guys like Kenny Clark are going to show their value is because, as you say, as the run game starts to return
back
to prominence, now people
you
are going to regret that Jaron Reed and A'shaun Robinson, who was PO'd.
Not a happy man.
He was angry and was wearing his anger very baldly.
But you know something? The Alabama kids, this has happened before. It was Cornelius Ingram from Alabama, I believe. When he didn't go in the first round, came back the second day, ended up going to Baltimore early in the second round, I believe. These kids, we all thought were going to be first-round guys, right? A'shaun, Jaron Reed.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Who was the third? Reggie Ragland?
Yep.
All the Alabama kids come back day two. There's something about these Alabama kids that they may be upset. I'll guarantee you that night was the longest night of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine being their parents, their loved ones, up with them all night. I mean, you talk about heartbroken. And at that age, you know
slightly
what they are?
Embarrassed.
They're embarrassed.
Yeah.
Because we've been touted as this and other people. Are not, to come back and face the music day two, the Bama kids always do. And typically they're productive in the NFL.
Well, I like what the NFL does on day two with those guys as well. And actually gives them that moment.
Yes.
Because, you know, compared to day one where everyone's coming on the stage and they're kind of ushered off quickly, those guys on day two do – after everything they've gone through, and you're exactly right what those emotions must be, on day two, the NFL gives them a little bit more time on the stage because they don't have the rush of the next guy coming.
It's not 30-something
And I really like that. I think that everyone who did come down on day two probably was glad that they did stick around as hard as it might have been.
I'm with you on that totally, and I don't criticize the ones that leave.
Right.
Okay, I hope everybody wanted to be clear.
Yeah.
I'm not criticizing the guys who don't come back. Like, Miles Jack didn't come back for day two.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not criticizing them. That's one of the toughest things going. I was a scrub, guys, all right? I was a decent college football player. I was in the 12-round draft. I don't get drafted.
I heard you couldn't cover Dwight Collins. I blew that joke. Darn. Anyway, all right.
That would be accurate. But you know, at the end of 12 rounds, I don't get picked.
Right.
Now, who really knows that I didn't get picked? I know. I'm out on campus feeling like every eye is on me because I didn't get picked. And the truth of the matter is no one even knew I was on campus that day.
Right.
But that's how it felt.
I
remember driving home to New York to get away and hide for a while because I was embarrassed I didn't get picked. I can't imagine being a projected first-round guy
I get that. I get that completely. But the other side of that, and I say this 1,000 times around this time of year, every year, but – I was, you know, I was right there up in the green room with A'shaun and his family. I was sitting right there actually talking to Lynn Swann and Ike Taylor and who would win that Steeler on Steeler matchup, which was heaven for me. But anyway, at that time, A'shaun gets drafted, and he had probably 10 or 15 family members with him. And as he got, you know, for that moment at least, all is forgiven. Maybe not by him, but right. The family is so overjoyed.
Happy.
And it is,
right.
I always say, I'm a smart aleck and I like to make fun of stuff, but man, it is hard. You can't be cynical when you watch it. It's just the greatest because you feel their lives. Yes. You know, well, time will tell, but they feel like they've got the world on a string and you can feel that suddenly, not his life, their lives have all just been transformed by this moment. And 6 months from now, we'll worry if he's making it in 3 years and everything. But for that one moment, it's you know, I mean, listen, I graduated from high school and my family was happy. I can't imagine if I got drafted in the NFL.
And for you guys who are closer to it, the one thing that I worry, it's not even a worry, but if you're there day one, you know that outfit has been picked.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that, yeah.
The right? Day two one. Day two outfit is like, oh, Lord, what am I going to wear? Because you can't bring a second outfit.
Right.
Because if you bring a second outfit,
you're saying you're
you've opened it up to people right. That maybe I won't go in the first round, and you don't want that in the atmosphere. Yep. So you've got to be able to go. Because remember when Geno Smith didn't go?
Right,
yep.
And he did come back day two. Remember he had a sweater that I think his agent ran out and bought it.
Right. Like,
just put this over the top of it. We'll be okay. So that's what you have to do. But if you bring a second outfit, you're telling yourself you're not going
to
the
first round.
See, that's
why I keep the bar low so that I just wear the same things over and over again so nobody would say, like,
just call it a day.
It's day six, and Dave still hasn't been drafted.
Last thing before you go, CD, because you're wrapping up your final moments of 2016 draft analysis, and then you'll go and hibernate until college football season gets going. But the name I feel like that's gotten a ton of buzz is Christian Hackenberg. And, of course, Paxton Lynch got a lot of buzz, too. I'm going to make this statement and then just tell me what you think overall about Hackenberg. He's going to be better than Paxton Lynch as an NFL football player. And everybody laughs at me and thinks I'm a fool. But, you know, Penn State was garbage, and it was a bad situation for him. I mean, there were very few guys on the offensive side with the Nittany Lions the last couple of years when you would watch their game that seemed worthy of a Big Ten field, save Hackenberg. So it was hard to judge him. But the knock on him, oh, he's so inaccurate. He's so inaccurate. First of all, I saw a lot of throws on the move from him, and I use the eyeball. I don't need your fancy advanced metrics. My eyeballs tell me what I need to know about an NFL QB, and he's it. He's big, and he can sling it, and he does it with ease. I like this guy, Paxton Lynch. I've watched only a game and a half of his plus some highlights that everybody else
did you watch the Auburn Bowl game? Because that one will hurt him.
Well, yeah, that's the one. Maybe I'm knocking him too. Yeah,
no, I'm just saying. I'm just saying. If that's your,
game.
I mean, if that's your view, you're gonna walk away and go, "Yeah, absolutely." Listen, I sat down. I was doing work. I was doing an NFL game that weekend, so I was getting my stuff together and I turned it on. It's just regular TV. This wasn't even regular tape, so it's you gotta be careful with that too. Mm-hmm. They're in the middle of the first quarter. I think it was a 4th-and-2 play. They have the ball now. Auburn's defense last year, not very good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and 4th-and-2, 4th-and-1, whatever, they decide to go for it. He fakes the zone read, and he sticks it to the fullback out in the flat, and he knocks the fullback down with the ball because he's inaccurate with him. Kid catches it, but he falls down short of the first down. Click, I'm done for the day. Turned out I went back and checked the stats. He had a horrible day. They got rolled, blah, 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 blah. A lot going on at that time with the program. Coach leaving to go to Virginia Tech, blah, blah, blah. He's leaving. All those things. But if that's your view of him, it's going to put some questions in your head. I get that. Here's my thing with Hackenberg. I love the physicality of this kid. When I see him, you're like, oh, man, the big man said, quarterback, kid, you're going to be a quarterback. When you see him fling it around, he looks great. I saw him throwing shorts one day, and I was just like, oh, my God, who is this? This kid is something. Watch him on tape. We talk about the inaccuracy, blah, 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 blah. Footwork, there's times when guys, you know, he swing pass and he skips it behind him, and you're like, where was that from? Why is he high and wide here? Some of it is exactly as Dave said. He's getting hit so much, I think that a lot of times he's, okay, where's the rush because of all that? Can you fix him? Because he's such a specimen, plenty of people say, I can fix him.
Right.
And
most
if anybody
time,
can Chan Gailey with all that he's done?
I would put my money on Chan Gailey before I put my money on a whole lot of other people. I mean, Chan's in that upper echelon of people who have done it in the league and have the skins, and the rest of us better just sit and listen when they talk, all right? My thing has always been this, though. If they're inaccurate in college, rare you become more accurate in the NFL. The windows are tighter. The rush is stronger. People cover faster. All of those things. It is rare. Now, someone pointed out Matt Ryan to me. Now, Matt was a 59.91% thrower in college, 60%. But he was acknowledged as the top guy coming out his year. The difference being for Christian Hackenberg, who was around a 54, 55%, I think, overall in college, it was different coming off of his hand. The ball ball was getting there from Matt as opposed to with Christian. You didn't know quite where it was going. And as I've said many times, I know I'm not going to get invited to the Hackenberg family reunion, and I get that, but I sure hope that kid proves me wrong. Because I go back to this with him. Penn State got that horrible probation. He wasn't even a freshman yet. He was the recruit.
Yep. I know. That's why I feel bad. I do feel bad for him with
and
that.
And he stuck with him.
Yep.
He could have very easily went, well, I'm going to go somewhere else. He could have done that. He didn't do it.
Yep.
He hung in there, tried to keep people together, fought his way through. We can criticize him for a lot of things. I think his depth of character, by that move right there, I'm rooting for the kid.
And somehow it's turned into him being beaten up a little bit because he comes in with Bill O'Brien and then everything flips and suddenly it's James Franklin and he's unhappy with the scheme and he's unhappy with the situation. And now that's a detriment. See, he didn't rise above that.
I think that some of that is way overblown. I really do for him. I think people are looking at it the wrong way. I think ultimately this is a very good kid, a strong kid, who probably got a little frustrated along the way because it didn't go quite the way he expects, especially after his freshman year. That freshman year, it wasn't scintillating in terms of wins and losses, but boy, they played their butts off.
Yeah,
but he did too.
Right. At the end of that freshman season, you said, "Well, obviously he'll be the first."
I mean, we penciled him right in, didn't we?
Yep.
And understandably so.
But he doesn't seem like the kind of guy who's a bad guy and not going to work hard to overcome everything that people have said about.
That's what I feel with him too, Hank. I really do, and I wish him all the best because he's probably going to punch me in the face when he sees me.
Well, I'll tell you a couple things.
I understand it
real fast. I'll just make a couple of points here. Paxton Lynch, to me, everybody loves the pro comps. You know who I see? I see poor man's Colin Kaepernick there, and that's not a compliment. And
he's
it's funny,
not the same athlete.
And it's funny that the descriptive description you would use would apply to both guys. And it's interesting that we know Elway and Kubiak presumably were interested in Cap, and then they wind up with Lynch. So, and the thing I say again all the time about these guys, you as a scout. And then so many of a high percentage of the analysts on television and otherwise are either ex-QBs or ex-coaches. You guys all like accuracy. You have created, and rightly,
we haven't we?
The number one priority for an NFL QB is accuracy.
Dave is right. We have
the number one. That's above anything else. So like everything.
It's kind of important though. If you're not accurate, the other guy's not going to.
I know it's important.
You know, we wake up in the morning and the first thing we say is accuracy.
It's, but I mean, you got. I really do think that there's a little bit too much emphasis placed on it. And here are my two examples that disprove that that's the most important thing. Ben Roethlisberger and Cam Newton. And by the way, Christian Hackenberger is going to have Eric Decker and Brandon Marshall. And what do we always say about, oh, you know why Kelvin Benjamin's a great fit in Carolina for Cam? Because of the big
catch
wingspan
radius.
that helps cover up the inaccuracy.
Well, I just hope that Eric Decker and Brandon Marshall do not have to be go-go gadget and have to really go up there. And the other thing, you know, Ben and Cam, what's their distinguishable trait that Christian Hackenberg doesn't have?
Winner?
Ability to run the football.
Athletes.
Oh, yeah.
Ability to run the football. Ben is not going to beat you running, but he's going to beat you because you're not going to get him down initially. You know the expression about Ben. You know you're a Pittsburgh guy. It's not the first 3 seconds of a play that scares me with Ben Roethlisberger.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's the next 3 seconds because he gets out of the pocket, creates plays, and next thing you know, he kills you. Cam, of course, with the legs, the ability to run the football, scramble. People fall off of him the same way, and now someone comes open. Hackenberg's not that type of a guy. But let's see if he has that little bit of oak tree in him to keep some people off of him and stand firm and make those throws. I'm rooting for the best for him.
Well, he's about as big a kid as I've seen.
He's a monster now.
As a quarterback. But
there are no little quarterbacks. There are very few little quarterbacks anymore unless you're Vernon Adams. And I know he's getting his opportunity to a couple of places.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
If he goes to Canada, as I suspect he ultimately will, he's going to be the most outstanding player up there. Mm-hmm.
Super nice kid, too. I got to talk to him for about a half an hour a month or so ago. And, yeah, really nice and really, you can tell, committed to playing football, playing
kid.
Quarterback. Not going to make any adjustments.
Love that kid. All right, I'm going to go.
Charles Davis,
Fight
Gang
on, Brave
Buster.
Army team.
Do you know this is his first ever appearance, black tie? What kind of booking? Shoddy booking.
We should
on
be
your
shaming
part.
Black tie for that.
That is shameful. Why always Bucky Brooks and Daniel Jeremiah when Charles Davis is around?
Well, nice to see Charles. Is part of the, he's part of the extended Move the Sticks family, so he feels bad, actually. He told me prior to, he feels like he's cheating on DJ here.
Thank you, Charles Davis. What a mensch.
Great stuff. Great
what
stuff.
A great
Thanks,
fellow. Charles. There he goes. A proud volunteer, but not that day in Neyland Stadium when Dwight Collins got. No, I don't want to talk anymore about that. Let's rank our quarterbacks, Handsome. I want to. Where do you think? Let's say what's a fair gauge? 6 years from now.
Yep.
6 years from now, rank the quarterbacks for me
from this class.
Yes.
I mean, I think Goff. I think Goff was the right choice, and there was so much made of like one's more pro ready, but one has more upside and everything else. I think Goff is going to be a star in LA. I think Goff. Will be an NFL star as opposed to just a team star, and you know, in that he will be in LA in this market and is a marketable guy and will be good enough to.
Why is he marketable? Because he's got blonde hair. Everybody keeps saying
he's
that.
A great looking guy. I'm not afraid to say that he's a great looking guy.
He's handsome, but he's not
very handsome.
I listen. I stood 2 feet away from him. He was handsome. Is Tom Brady shaking in his boots? No. Is Cam Newton?
Tom Brady's not going to be here to shake in his
boots.
Oh,
I forgot to tell you. What Let me it? Say that. Oh, we didn't really talk much Chicago trip.
Yeah, you
so
wouldn't
let's do
really.
That real
you wouldn't talk to me.
I was blowing you off. Yeah. No, I mean that was the busiest 7 days.
It was busy.
I had no time to do anything. I did.
We went out for dinner one time.
I have my chums who are still living in Chicago, and I saw not a one of them. Mm-hmm. It made me sick. And. I did catch up with, well, I count Jay Gish of Bindle Dog as a pal, but he also is the animator of the NFL.
Of course, the NFL. We need to do a new NFL.
I know. We were cooking that.
One day, here's a guarantee I will make. One day, we will do a what if the Rams had taken Carson Wentz.
All right.
NFL. And I'm saying like 5 or 6 years from now.
We could also do what if the Rams had taken RG3.
Mm.
We could make that one too, and look back in that way, and maybe marry it up with right now, and whether or not
let's
Jared
bring it
Goff
back.
Or Carson.
Ooh,
Wentz
you just
been there.
You the listener just heard the inception, I mean, and Black Dyke could maybe play the inception.
Handsome
horn.
People come to me all the
time.
The
inception,
Dave. How do you
do NFL?
Dave, how do you do it? Where I say, listen, the ideas are up there like stars. Just reach up there and grab them.
Carry on.
But so I didn't get to do a lot of stuff. But I did catch up with my sister and her two little girls, which was a lot of fun to run up and down Michigan Avenue with these two little girls. See, although it rained on us, and that was the theme of the trip there. Freezing, nasty, bone chilling rain.
Here's the thing. I get a little homesick for the UK and for London. And so when I see rain, because it happens so infrequently in LA, when I see rain, I get kind of excited about it. So the first couple of days.
I get the same thing.
Right.
Pittsburgh and Chicago. So yeah, I have the same sort of nostalgia for it.
The first couple of days, I was like, this is great. You know, you could go outside, you had a coat, you put a hood up, you're fine. It wasn't raining that hard. The Saturday of draft, I spent a lot of it trundling around outside doing stuff. I got back to my hotel room and I was soaked. Like actually, like my underwear was wet, and it wasn't because I had had an accident. and I mean, it was that wet, and you probably could have sailed back from Chicago to LA.
Yeah, it was unpleasant. I spent a fair amount of my working time out in the rain because you know I'm a man of the people, and if they're out there,
they wanted
that's
to
where
mix
I
with
am.
You.
But that wasn't great. But I did meet. Zach, well, I met Kyle Long of the Chicago Bears, and I'm saying it now. This guy is in the pantheon of our great NFL personalities.
Well, and his brother Chris Long is.
Yeah, I know. I haven't caught up with Chris yet, but Kyle was terrific, and he joins the pantheon that includes Ike Taylor, Terrence Newman, Steve Smith, Calais Campbell. These are some of our very favorites we've interacted with. And, of course, A.J. Hawk. Handsome.
Hawk was there. I bumped into him.
Well, I didn't see him.
I did see him.
He did deliver a message.
And,
but...
his father.
Oh,
his
no.
His dad was there.
The
Hawk.
We didn't get to cross paths, and I'm sad about that. But
do you know
sad...
what he did? Can I tell you? I don't know if you know this already. Apparently, he was asked to come up up there to do some bits and pieces. So he and his father got their what do they call it? Cruiser, you know, like mobile home thing.
Oh yeah,
and drove. They're like,
that
hey,
right?
let's dad, let's go, let's get in and let's drive to Chicago.
Oh yeah, he's talked about that thing. Yeah, they have one of those
a Hawk Cruiser or something.
I can't think of what it's called. Yeah, the. What do you call it?
What do you call those things? Black
a mobile
RV.
An RV.
An RV.
That kind of thing.
I couldn't think of it. But anyway, I don't know. Hawk has not indicated that he's definitely done, but he did love being back in his home state and playing for the Bengals in 2015. In a way, if he wants to keep playing, then I don't know if he does. But in a way, I'm kind of happy about this because now I have zero reason once again to ever – root in any way, shape, or form for the Bengals, and he gave me that for 16 games.
So you're happy that he's...
Well, I turned that off come January, and I let him know that. And when he joined us on the show, I let him know, I like you, Hawk, but I like the Steelers better, and I hope they defeat you soundly. And so they did. But I also met... So Kyle Long will have some video for you coming up here. We're going to do a series of that with him because we had a lot of... We covered a lot of ground, he and I. But then I also met Zach Miller, the tight end of the Chicago Bears. Talk about a list. Tom Brady, Eric Decker, Luke Kuechly, Cam Newton. You guys have company because Zach Miller, boy, oh boy.
He's a
good-looking
guy. I met him when we went to eat. He was in the same restaurant as us. And
that's right.
Yeah, I was attracted.
Yeah, Handsome and I, our culinary tour across these United States rolled on at a place called Prime and Provisions. It was a very fancy place, steakhouse, and it looked very much like a Baz Luhrmann period.
It did,
movie.
Didn't it?
Yeah, it looked like something out of...
I'm going to give it draft grades. I would give... Ambiance. Do you say, is that how you say it?
Ambiance. Ambiance.
I'm going to give it an A-. Food, I'm going to give it a B-.
B-. What didn't you enjoy?
The steak was a little, it was kind of meh. Okay.
What was great, though, was they start the meal, they gave you a big, thick chunk of bacon, and I don't know how to describe it other than to say.
Well, I'll tell you what it was.
And it's
I'll
like
tell
a
2x4 about it. It was
a
2x4 bit of bacon, but they'd melted some chocolate on it.
Is well,
there
that
was,
true?
There was some kind of drizzled chocolate on there. Now, let me tell you something.
Chocolate!
I don't know if you noticed this. We were sharing a table with, I should think, 6 or 7 people. And they chopped it up for us, and they gave everyone a slice. There was a pretty big chunk left. And I think he was your neighbor at the time. And he did it very slyly and very surreptitiously. And he's not here to defend himself. Maurice took that last chunk of bacon. And it was. I was like, oh, I like some of that. And it was gone in a second, in an instant.
Now, wait, you're saying Maurice Jones-Drew.
Maurice Jones-Drew.
He ate extra bacon.
Yes.
It was a gigantic chunk of bacon that he got.
Bacon.
But then the piece he got
piece,
was not enough.
But that was not enough.
He had more.
He had all the rest. The chocolate bacon.
That does not sound like the Maurice that I know.
I know. I was surprised.
We ate steak. I had steak 2 nights in a row in Chicago. Again,
doesn't though, look like it. You're so slender.
Thank you. I didn't get to have as many delicious meals. I didn't get to have as many good times, but I did get out for some good food a couple of times there, and it was good being back in Chicago. Handsome, the craziest thing. Oh, well, Black Tie wants to give us his body language rankings. I want to talk Laremy Tunsil here real quick. Let me give you my quarterback rankings. Number one, I think Carson Wentz ends up being the best of them.
Okay.
I really like the ease with which, again, this is the eyeball test. Damashek, you can make fun because Dave said last year that Ryan Mallett was going to be really good. Now, listen, he didn't behave himself off the field. I can't account for that. I'm not in charge of what they do off the field. Damashek's eyes, though, tell him who's going to be good and who isn't. And I've been pretty right about that. And Black Tie, you can make all your wisecracks. I have a pretty good record of being a QB whisperer and telling you that guy's going to be good and that guy's going to be only so-so and that guy's going to stink. And I've been watching him. And Carson Wentz gets rid of it not just super quickly. And he is a high-end – I mean, he pulls that trigger super fast. Not as fast as Aaron Rodgers, but he's up there with how quick he gets rid of it. It's also the ease with which he does it. Everything seems he's very fluid in every yep. way out there. And I like that and how that translates into pro ball. Jared Goff, I don't know about. I like Christian Hackenberg, so I'm going to put him at number three behind Goff. Cardale Jones, I don't love the landing spot there.
You love Cardale Jones. Just get it out there.
I wanted him in Pittsburgh, yeah. I wanted the Steelers.
He'll play. He'll play. Tyrod Taylor is as good as he was last year, you know, his first 4 years starting.
Got hurt.
He's going to get he's slender. He's a little guy. He's going to
run around too much.
Hurt.
You get hurt.
EJ Manuel is not going to be, you know, probably won't be there past training camp. I think Cardale Jones will start three, four games this
Really?
Year.
Wow. Yeah. That's a pretty bold statement.
Well, I don't think it's that bold. He's going to be the backup on the team, and Tyrod Taylor is an injury.
Well, he's perceived as a project, and so
then what else are they going to do?
He's very Ryan Mallett-y when you think about it. That really long form with the
hold on. If 2 weeks ago you said he was the second best quarterback in this draft,
but
those words came out of your mouth, and I challenged you on it, and you said no. Mark my words.
All right, mark my words. I just
blah blah blah.
I don't love where he landed there. That's not the greatest.
It's good for him because he will play.
All right. Well, now you're awfully convinced that Tyrod Taylor is going to be down for a month in 2016.
He's had one season in the league, and he was down for a while for exactly the reason that he probably wasn't a starter before, because he's probably not going to be able to take the hits that you have to be able. That's why you get a guy like Cardale Jones, because he can take it.
By the way, I mean, the Wentz v. Goff conversation has been had ad nauseum, but one more thing that everybody keeps bringing up is Carson Wentz played against lesser competition. You know who else did? A lot of other successful guys in the NFL didn't play college ball in the SEC, and they went on to do just fine. There are plenty of examples at quarterback currently and in the past, and so I kind of reject that one out of hand. It's not like he was out there playing against Dave's junior high or something. He was still playing against some fine college football players out there. Black Tie, go ahead, lay it on me. Lay it on us. What are the body language rankings here? Start us off, Jared Goff.
Jared Goff, and everyone was going gaga, as you would say, for his appearance on draft day, and he looked like the stereotypical or prototypical high school quarterback that you would cast. And yeah, had some Bond comparisons here and there, a little bit too stiff.
Bond comparisons?
Yeah, I saw some James Bond comparisons, but
I
know it was weird. I know. I think more high school quarterback. He's a little bit too stiff for me, though. He's a little bit too.
I didn't hear any of that.
Too stoic for me. And the whole thing with body language, for those that don't know, it's all about the quarterback. Can he galvanize his teammates in the huddle? Is he going, when he looks at teammates in the eyes, are they going to believe him? Are they going to be ready to go to war for him? And we saw this with Tim Tebow more so than anybody else. He got in that huddle. All of a sudden, these guys believed and were ready to go. How much can you inspire your teammates? That's why I look at the body language meter so much. And I just worry that Goff is a little bit too, you know, just a little bit too dry on the outside. I don't know if he's going to be able to emote, be able to get those guys in the.
So who do you like?
All right. Well, a lot of QBs cut a pretty dry figure these days.
Well, I don't know. If you look at Tom Brady, he shows a lot of fire. Shows a lot of fire. Same thing Aaron Rodgers. He's quiet to the media, but in the huddle, those guys, they're not pretty dry. In the huddle with their teammates in the locker room, they get down to business. I like Carson Wentz. I really do. And people call him out like, oh, you know, he looks kind of weird. And someone pointed out that his walk-up music at the draft was country music. I'm like, that's fantastic. Someone who's comfortable in their own skin goes out there and is not going to act like, you know, he listens to all this stuff. He's going to go out there and be true to himself. He looks like a gamer. Just like his body language, just even playing. He relaxes. He's guys, you know, he has this gamerish feel to him. Like, he's just out there having fun. And I like that. I like Carson Wentz, man. He throws a pretty good spiral, too.
You know what? There is something in your overly verbose description there that I agree with.
Shaq, like I say, overly verbose, you of all people.
I'm not overly verbose. I take the words that I need to tell what I need to tell you. I do, yes. I need, in any conversation, I need 80% of all available talking time. But every syllable is essential.
Precise. Gotcha.
But I kind of agree with what you're saying there. I like the figure he cuts on and off the field.
Yeah, a lot of people say Goff, oh, Matt Ryan, and he looks more Sam Bradford to me. And that's a problem. I'm not loving that. So.
His lower half, I don't like his
–
I don't
stiff.
Like his trunk. There's something about – I think he looks slight. There's something about him that does not convey big-time QB to me. But all right, go ahead.
So, yeah, those are my top two. I haven't really fully delved into the rest.
Oh, okay. That's all the body language. That's fine for now.
That'll be enough.
I got something else, though. This is not football-related, but this is soccer-related. It's a big story. The champions of the Premier League, Leicester City, shout-out to them. The odds for them winning the Premier League, I'm sure you guys have heard of this, was 5,000 to 1, which is, to put in perspective, the Browns to win the Super Bowl are 400 to 1. So it's an all-timer. There's no NFL comparison. There's pretty much no American sports comparison unless you do something like, hey, a D-League team came in and took the place of the Sixers and won the NBA championship in 2 years the same roster.
In modern time, is the closest thing to it. Butler almost beating Duke.
It's not even close. It really isn't. I mean, that's not even factoring like the salary cap, the lack of a salary cap. The Premier League is made.
What's the number? You'll know better than me. But how many teams have won the Premier League? Six. Has been around since like 1990.
Yeah,
about then. And only six teams have ever won it.
Leicester, it's the
exact opposite of the NFL,
man.
Where any team can win. You know, if a team like Leicester would have gone into this season and their fans would have been genuinely at the start of the season would be like, boy, I hope if we finish 10th this year, that would be pretty.
They were 14th last season. They were at the bottom of the league at some point last season, and they won it this season with two games to spare.
Well, I say it every time we talk Premier League, but I just wish. I guess Major League Baseball would be the best candidate in American sports for this. Relegation. Let's get some relegation going in one of our sports. That's marvelous stuff.
I do think outside of the NFL, like a lot of American leagues and its structure are very dated. They need to update it, either with baseball, as you keep saying, like the NBA and the tournament they should have during playoff time. Update the season. You don't need 82 games, 162 games. Give us the more fun, man.
154 would be better.
If you like it, Dave, I think, you know, the place to start would be with producers. You know, we could start relegating producers. And I think I know who's occupying the
right
spot at the moment.
Bucky Brooks brought it up at the draft. We need to also relegate some gold jacket guys. Some guys maybe, we're going to take the gold jacket.
Somebody else, they deserve it.
We'll get into that at another
Honey,
time.
I can't find my gold jacket anywhere in my cupboard. Where's it gone?
No, part of the ceremony will be the ceremonial removal of the jacket.
Removal of the jacket from the closet.
I'm sorry, Bob Greasy. Yeah. Hey, you know what you have? You have that feather in your cap as the only quarterback to be undefeated. You got that. But you don't have your gold jacket anymore because I'm giving it to Jim.
Maybe some current Hall of Famers come and actually remove them from as the closet door. They're like, no, not my jacket.
All right. We'll have a lot. I mean, you've seen plenty of draft analysis.
Yeah,
and I want to talk Tunsil. I just will say, you know, shame the devil, you know, the residents of Mount Pius, whoever is responsible for this, shame on that person. I have no issue with anything. He was an 18-year-old, whenever the video was taken. If he was a 21-year-old, save the irresponsibility if you know you're about to get drafted. That does raise a red flag. But otherwise, if you're a college kid, I'm not going to moralize about what you do with yourself in your recreation time. I felt bad for him across the board. I feel sad about the money that he lost. I do, though, think that teams really are going to regret not taking him, including the Ravens and the Giants and the Chargers. Well, you know, a lot of teams in front of them. But how happy are you, Handsome? Are you a 10 out of 10 in happiness, or are you concerned
in any way? I'm not concerned about his character. Look, I mean, they didn't do it on video, but I would imagine there are a few more players in this draft class who you know, you could have found them a picture or a video of them doing something similar.
And that's the difference. It's the same
thing as other
major incidents in the NFL. If there wasn't a video of this, this would have been a blip.
And it was something he had addressed in interviews with not just that team, not with the Dust of the Dolphins, but every team. Like he said, that this is something that's in my past, and it's in my past. He's past drug. I'm not worried about that part of it. I think he's going to be I'm more interested to see how it rolls out. They have Brandon Albert playing left tackle at the moment. They spent a first-round pick on the right tackle, Juwan James, 2 years ago. Brandon Albert left the Chiefs because the Chiefs tried to push him into guard when they badly, and now on reflection, drafted Eric Fisher with the first overall pick 2 years ago. So Albert didn't want to do that. Albert got paid as a left tackle. That really is what it came down to. He was going into a contract year, didn't want to get left guard money when he considered himself a left tackle. He's being paid left tackle money, so now his concern to move to left guard is no problem. I think that's probably what winds up happening. Tunsil plays left tackle. Albert plays left guard. And the Dolphins also, you know, I don't want to get into their draft too much, drafted a running back, drafted some more receivers, all of which was pretty interesting because it wasn't like those were the positions that needed. There's no excuses for Ryan Tannehill. It's a make-or-break season under Adam Gase, a head coach who can do things with the quarterback. He's been given all the weapons he needs. It's make-it-or-break-it time.
And how about they also acquired the best name in the 2016 NFL draft, Leonte Carew! Move over, So-So Jamabo. I might have to sing about both those guys.
You should do.
At some
point. I
want
to hear
soon.
A Caruso.
We'll continue to talk draft, all
but
that kind of stuff.
Let's get on to the
real. Let's talk Game of Thrones real quick here. We promised it. Spoiler alerts may
galore.
Be ahead.
Galore. There are going to be spoiler alerts.
Definitely
going to
be spoilers.
There will be. Oh, by the
definitely
way.
Definitely will be.
So Handsome gets a lot of accolades from national media for what he did with Boringer. And Black Tie just gave us his precious EPL update. And Damashek is trending in the city of Pittsburgh because I made some sardonic remarks about Alex Ovechkin on the heels of Chris Letang getting suspended for a game. And I took a couple pot shots at the alleged Great Eight as the Penguins lead that series. For now, at least. Anyhow, Handsome Hank, let's talk about episode 2. Of Game of Thrones, and I think highlighted, I know everybody's excited. Here comes everybody for a spoiler alert. But if you're a fan of the show, how surprising is it? Jon Snow is alive. My question, first of all, is doesn't this open a can of worms for the Red Witch? Isn't all of her waking time going to be spent like, hey, do the raise the dead thing?
What, you think that they'll be
like? Well, if she can do it for Jon Snow, do it for me now.
What I like for the Red Witch, is it, who hasn't been a sympathetic character for a while, when she was glumly looking at herself in the mirror at the end of episode one, and if you haven't watched it, don't, because it was almost one of the worst things I've seen on TV.
Frightening.
But when presumably in episode 3 when he comes and taps her on the shoulder and says, hey, thanks for that, and she's like, whoa, you're alive, I didn't think I could do that magic, she's going to be, you know, full of herself, a little bit more confident, because she was
in a slump,
she was a bit down in the dumps.
Yeah.
I do think it's interesting that none of them, with the exception of Brienne, I'm trying to think of anyone else who would fit the description. Is anybody else clean at this point? Everybody's done some dastardly things.
Good point.
Because it's easy to say, well, Theon Greyjoy, and I do say, you know, I have a hard time getting behind his resurrection story, wienerless as he is, and I feel bad for him on that front. I wouldn't want Ramsay to forcibly remove my wiener either. And then eat a bratwurst to tease him. Remember that? That was
right.
One of the weird
I do remember,
things. But,
yeah.
I, you know, but Theon is like, well, yeah, I guess a lot of people have done bad. Who do you root for in this show now? Everybody.
Well, Jon Snow's hands are pretty clean, right?
I guess he's clean,
yeah.
But he did well. He must have. I'm trying to think. Maybe you're right. He's semi pure.
Yeah, he's pretty clean. Yeah.
What Handsome is that? So Ramsay killed his adoptive father.
Well, his true father.
That's his real father?
Yes.
Yeah.
Lord Bolton made Ramsay Bolton?
Yeah, he made him. He was an illegitimate son, but he was not but it was the mother. The mother
show.
Was not.
This show confuses me.
It's very confusing.
And now all of a sudden I have to invest in what's going on in Dorne and on the Iron Islands and everything. My head's already confused.
Did you see what they're bringing in a new element to the show now with Bran? And now that's flashbacks. They can
I like that.
I like the so Bran flashbacks. Has been living under a tree. With a sprite girl and poor old Hodor for like a year and a half now. And then finally goes
outside. And he somehow is magically aged 15 years.
Yeah, he's aged a lot. But I mean, not surprising. He's been under a tree for a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like what's been going on with him? Apparently he's – and the way he spoke to the old man who was sort of attached to the roots of the tree – they've been on many vision journeys to different places. Like, finally, he took me somewhere I wanted to go. I would like to know a little bit more about what he's been
and up. Hodor with the actor playing Hodor, you know, the reaction as he, you know, he did the inflection sort of like Groot.
Hodor?
Hodor? What happened? But then what happened with him? Hodor.
Hodor.
But what, and then did she, what, and then what happened with that lady? Like, Hodor. I mean, his inflection of Hodor was telling. I think he's going to end
that
up.
Not that telling.
Yeah, maybe
not telling right. Enough that you knew what the hell he was trying to
no,
say.
No, but Hodor/Willis was on the scene for some apparently significant events in how we got to where we are. He's obviously there with Ned Stark and.
Well, he was already old as well. Ned Stark seemed older than Hodor, what is now. But apparently Hodor is significantly older than Ned Stark.
But they say he has like six. Giant, you know, he has a giant gene in him or so. Yeah. So he's
and then
like
we have the girl who rides up on the horse, and that one is the one who may or may not.
Lyanna Stark.
What's her name?
Lyanna Stark. She's Ned.
And that's Ned's sister.
Mm-hmm.
Young Sansa back there knows all the stuff.
And the Mad King, before he went mad, may have made his time with Ned Stark's sister
to create
Jon Snow, which is why he would be the heir to the throne.
No, the theory is the Mad King's son, Rhaegar Targaryen, was the one who spent time with Lyanna Stark.
Right.
And
how do you know all this?
Because he's young Sansa. Because
I drink and I know stuff, Jack. That's what I do. Except the drinking part. Tyrion.
So, handsome. Then we saw Ramsay, who may be the most diabolical of them all.
He's definitely, and my favorite thing is, we're getting, not often that you're given clues in this one, but Ramsay went back and said, had this plan to go and attack the wall, the Castle Black, thinking that it's just being defended by a bunch of robbers and rapists from the Night's Watch. But of course, when he gets there, he's going to discover a giant that likes wiping people's heads across walls. And all the wildlings, and I'm quite looking forward, because I feel like we're being set up for he's going to get his
battle.
Just dessert.
And they've taken it, right.
I don't think it'll be a major battle. I have a feeling he's going to go up there and just get stomped on by a giant, and that will be it.
Well, Ramsay is no stranger to the sword play and stuff. He can handle himself. We've seen that.
Patrick Corley asked a great question. Patrick Corley, he wrote the Game of Thrones NFL draft.
Well, let me say this. Why is Ramsay not held to the same standard of hatred among the viewership that King Joffrey was?
That's what I was about.
Isn't Ramsay worse than Joffrey at this point? And yet everybody hated King Joffrey.
But Joffrey was a sadist.
Well, so
Ramsay's a sadist.
What's Ramsay?
But Joffrey, here's the difference. Joffrey was a sadist without actually having any kind of matches. That's not the word I'm looking for. But like, he wasn't an action hero in any way himself. He was a coward and a sadist. Whereas Ramsay, as you just said, is no stranger to swordplay. So he's an action man as well.
Right.
He's
a blue collar. Yeah. Committing the hideous deed.
Right.
Where
Joffrey is just assigning or just like, let's torture someone for fun.
Take his left foot. Right. Joffrey would just do that.
Why is that the same as my voice you use for me? Am I in some way?
All British villains are the
same. Am I Joffrey? I'm a British villain, am I? That's what's coming out.
Speaking of Joffrey and Ramsay and otherwise, so Ramsay, his father, I thought that guy adopted him. I'm very confused. But Bruce Bolton, that's his name, right?
Roose Bolton.
Roose.
Yep.
Roose. Oh, well, that's better than Bruce Bolton, because I thought that's a weird name for someone who lives in Westeros. But Roose Bolton, who stuck a knife into Jon Snow a couple of seasons ago, had a knife stuck into him by Ramsay now. That was well down on the list of deaths, but then Ramsay turns around and has Roose Bolton's wife or his lady
and the baby
killed by dogs. He unleashes
some
feral beasts on the
hungry dogs.
Yeah, he and they attack and they rip them to shreds, which brings me to this worst death in Game of Thrones.
That's bad. Being burnt alive by your father when he tells you that he loves you is a bad one, too.
Having the mountain blow
crush
your skull
head
up by pushing your eyes into your head.
I think the mountain also, there was a man who was, you know, there's necessity to take a pee against a wall. And the mountain just came and cracked his head against the wall like it was an egg.
I mean, I would take that one over the ones that we just mentioned, though.
Well, none of these are good.
I wouldn't. I mean, listen. Again, down on the list.
Maybe being shot in the face with a crossbow while you're having a bowel movement.
I wouldn't want your midget son. Yeah, I wouldn't want someone to chop my head off. But I don't mean like in a battle. Like I didn't see it coming. Like whoop, my head just got chopped off.
When you have
off
to kneel down. And
I mean, like
any second now, someone's going to chop my head off.
Ned Stark, like getting walked out there and like put your head down now and like, you know, because it's coming. All right, here's what his highness.
I would react
decrees.
Very badly to that. I would react very badly. To
I would too.
Yeah.
I would not
be brave. I would cry.
Do you have any last words? You wouldn't hear them. I wouldn't hear that because I'd be screaming.
I would definitely be crying.
Oh yeah, listen, I would weep If you drop me into any situation there, I would weep.
Yeah, I'd be weeping a lot.
I mean, if you drop me into one of the high-end brothels of, what's his name, of Lord, you know.
Yeah, we haven't seen him.
No, what's his name? Pennywise? Pennyfinger? Littlefinger?
Littlefinger. Is he alive?
He's still alive.
He's alive. Even if you took me to one of those, I would weep out of fear of the women because they're too much woman for me. Like, there wouldn't be a good place for me. Although that is the town I would choose. Right? That's where is that where you would live?
I like the kind of Rose Garden place. What was that one? Where Lady Marjorie...
Yeah, that's the same town. The same one. What's it called?
King's Landing.
King's Landing.
Yeah, that's where I would...
Also, though, Dorne looks pretty nice.
Yep, although Dorne's about to go crazy now.
I don't know.
I don't think about Dorne. What other deaths are we...
Well, let's talk about the dragons as well, because I thought Tyrion was very brave, but it was like he was talking to, like, if a friend of yours said, hey, could you look after my dogs, you know, but they're German Shepherds or Labrador, you know, something that's a little bit bigger than your whatever... And you were trying to make friends with them the first time. That's sort of the voice and tone he was using to make sure that they would obey his orders. But then they've flown out of another window. We decided that he left the front door open, but I think that door would not be big enough for a dragon to get through.
Yeah, I've heard some talk about that. There must be a back door.
There must be a back
entrance. Must be like a big sliding.
Like almost like a...
A
bird, you know, for a bird to fly out of, like a bird house.
Right, but much bigger because it's
dragons. Dragons, right.
And there's also the third dragon
somewhere
out and about.
Roasting rams.
Maybe, yeah, I don't know. Maybe he's dead. Man, there's a lot going on right now over in Westeros.
Anything else, Black Tie?
They haven't shown us that room has like a back door in there, and that would be random to do right now. But I would say that... Tyrion dropped a line of dialogue, which opens up the whole dragon thing. He goes, dragons are smart. Like, up until now, we thought they're like these mindless beasts. And then you can see, even in his interactions with the dragons, where one's kind of motioning to him, hey, take my chain off. If we're playing now with smart, intelligent dragons, that changes the whole ballgame. So that was pretty interesting. But the last thing I want to point out, Henry, you brought up Ned Stark and from season one. Did you guys see the promo for episode 3?
Yes.
And so the very end of the promo, you see Bran again having another flashback and two people fighting, essentially two different setups fighting two different armies. That is a young Ned Stark going up against the Targaryen guard. And that is in front of the Tower of Joy because he's going to save his sister, Lyanna Stark.
Oh, when you just said Targaryen, by the way, that reminded me. I wouldn't want anybody to die to pour molten iron on my head.
Is that what happened to the
brother,
to the blonde
Daenerys's,
and then Daenerys's
didn't he get
brother, who
dragged along behind a chariot for a while as well?
After they ironed up his head.
I don't know if we saw that. Maybe that.
I thought there was someone who got dragged along by a chariot for a long way.
I think
way.
He made that happen.
Did he do that? Yeah. Maybe
dispatch
somebody
to do that to someone else.
But yeah. So we get the young Ned Stark back. I've been waiting for this since season 1, episode 9. That's going to be fun.
And
one more question.
Why does Jaime Lannister and Cersei Lannister and the Lannister gang have to live in fear of the religious organization? Can't the king, the boy king who makes
it sounds like that's
Marjorie,
coming.
Can't he just say at some point, like, all right, enough's enough. Go.
I'll tell you what I like about the
is
boy
Is it because
king.
They have Marjorie, and so he doesn't want them to kill Marjorie? And, but otherwise, isn't it like, all right, these people, these religious kooks, hey, army, go kill them all. I don't like their nonsense anymore.
It sounds like that's coming. What I like most about him is that he is, how old are we supposed to believe he is? Like 12, 13 years old. He's making his time with Marjorie. Congratulations to him, age 12, 13. I'd have been happy with it.
Finest specimen in all the seven kingdoms.
Kingdoms.
Is that number one?
Yeah, for me, yeah.
Marjorie is number one.
Yeah, she's a lovely looking woman.
A lot of people would go Sansa, but not me.
No,
I'm with Marjorie.
Marjorie. But I like the fact that he wears his crown at all times. It's just quite an extraordinary. He's like a kid playing dress up. He's always wearing that crown, and it's very like on the top of his head. There's just something funny about it.
Even into the bed with Marjorie.
Yeah, I'm sure he does.
Wants to let her know.
Ooh,
who's
look,
boss.
I've got a crown. It's just funny that he wears that.
Robb Stark's lady, though, that would be me. The dead lady now.
Well, yeah, I know she's dead, but yeah, no.
What's wrong with you, Black?
She was
fine, but she was not.
She was an attractive
woman.
She's
no Marjorie Tyrell.
Yeah, Marjorie is number one.
Yes.
All right. Well, listen, I think we've covered it all. I don't know.
I don't know
how much more thorough anybody could be on the Game of Thrones. We've said it all for episode 2, and we've said it all or maybe about 10% of what needs to be said about the draft. So we'll continue to cover that. Continue now as we shift into May and summertime. Hear me now. We're going to be shifting into certainly football, but as always, we keep our eye on the game of life. We're going to be talking NBA playoffs as these things heat up, maybe a little puck, certainly the Game of Thrones and the game of life, like I say, covered by me, Handsome Hank, Black Tie, and our usual gang. Who are you pointing at, Maurice?
I mean, Charles Davis was here.
Oh, yeah, well, I was going to say thanks to him, but Maurice is sorry he couldn't make it for our Thrones talk.
Maurice is promising that we're going to talk Game of Thrones, not just with him, but with other NFL players.
I know. We got to make sure that happens.
Let's make that happen.
But all right. So great times in Chicago, and thanks to Haitham Kalani for producing the show out in Chicago. As far as that goes, go look that one up, because I really thought that was a gangbusters podcast. Handsome, you didn't love that one, though.
What?
You didn't love the golf cart cast that we did at the
I didn't get
Network.
To listen to it yet.
Oh, you didn't. I saw it because you said it sent a tweet, and it said, you could watch other draft
shows,
or you could watch this one.
You misinterpreted it.
I parsed your words.
You're sensitive.
That's the same thing as saying, like, of all the people who've ever been on this show, Handsome, you're definitely one of them.
Well, here's my intention by the tweet that is now 10 days old, and I'm glad we're addressing this now, and you're so sensitive that I have to do this. My intention was, yeah, you could be watching NFL Network or ESPN's pregame, pre-draft show, but if you want to have some fun, listen or watch the DDFP.
All right.
Maybe you'd like to issue a written apology to me.
I see no reason why. Ooh, that's one of the best things that Kyle Long and I took care of, a written apology to a certain organization. That is coming for you. Lots more fun for you at NFL.com/podcasts and NFL.com and YouTube and NFL Now and all the rest of it. Thanks to Charles Davis. And thanks to Handsome Hank. And thanks to you. We'll be back with another podcast later in the week. In the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.